The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back!
Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everybody? Sam Franco, Chris Brame back with another exciting edition of the Crossover Podcast. That music you hear, a little bit of new for you as, look, Modest Mouse treated us well for 45 episodes, but it's time to make a change. Bring in some Drake, trying to make things a little more current around here. A little God's Plan is the name of
the
track.
He's a big Raptors fan, you know.
He is, yeah. And we will get to those Raptors here in a little bit.
So
on
LeBron.
The Crossover. That is correct. LeBron will be after they won Game 7, a Herculean effort from LeBron James to get them to that series with the Raptors. And we'll get to that in a little bit here on 960theref.com. But we're going to start off today talking NFL draft and the dogs, and we'll get to the NBA playoffs, and we'll cap things off today with a little talk about the latest and greatest craze to be hitting professional baseball, and that, of course, is Ronald Acuna Jr. So we'll hit all of that stuff coming up. But first, like we said, NFL draft and the next great middle linebacker for the Chicago Bears, who have had plenty, and the first dog off the board, Roquan Smith.
Yeah, the two best drafts easily were the Patriots and the Bears, because they both drafted two Bulldogs.
That is correct.
So they win the draft, according to our panel of experts.
That's right, and the Bears taking Roquan there in the first round, and then the Patriots taking Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel in the first round. So good picks for those teams for sure. Javon Wims also being drafted by the Bears on day three of the NFL draft. Surprisingly, the only player from Georgia drafted on Saturday at the draft. And we're obviously going to talk a lot about the players that did get drafted. But an interesting case is Trenton Thompson, who leaves Georgia after his junior season, could have stayed one more year, decided not to, doesn't get drafted.
Well, you know, and so this draft really sums up two things. I mean, we see what, you know, Michel and Chubb make the commitment to come back for another year, and it definitely improved their draft stock. I mean, Sony would not have been a first-round pick a year ago, and here he was. And then Chubb was, what, the fourth pick of the second round? He probably wouldn't have gone that high had he left after his junior season. So coming back definitely paid off for those two in the long run. And, you know, here's Trenton Thompson now, who could have come back, but decided not to. You know, it was really interesting because I was thinking about December and in the lead up to, you know, that downtime between the end of the SEC championship game and before the Rose Bowl, the reports coming out of Georgia was that Thompson was leaning and looking likely like he was going to return. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, he made the announcement that he was going to leave and go to the draft, which seemed to be as a bit of a surprise because the tea leaves seemed to be indicating that he was going to come back. So I don't know if he ended up getting bad advice or, you know, look, he's going to sign on as a free agent. He's going to be getting paid in some way, shape, or form to play football next year. And maybe for him it was just, you know, he's got his family, he's got his own personal life to think about, and coming back and playing in college for another year just wasn't something that he was in a position that he wanted to do. But it was definitely one of the surprises of the draft, because for a while there it looked like, I mean, you know, he was like a first, second round kind of prospect. And then, yeah.
It's just crazy to watch a guy tumble like that, and you know that the talent was there, obviously, for a you know, at least a second round selection. And unfortunately, sometimes some of the off-field stuff, some of the stuff in between the ears doesn't always translate to the next level. And obviously, we hope for nothing but the best for Trenton Thompson, but just a case where maybe coming back would have been to his benefit, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely appears that way. But, you know, at least not getting drafted like late in the draft, it gives him an opportunity to just find some situation that, you know, might be a better fit as opposed to some team just taking a flyer on him. Which brings me, by the way, to the Falcons quickly, who did commit my great pet peeve of the drafts, and they used their last pick of the draft on a linebacker from Yale, and that's gotten to be the thing that just irritates me, and I'll bring up Thompson. I mean, why not take him? And the guy didn't get drafted, John Atkins. I mean, when you get to the sixth round of the draft, I mean, what are you doing taking a linebacker from Yale?
Yeah,
Are you fooling everyone else out there that you see something about that guy that no one else has figured out?
Hey, they signed David Marvin.
They did?
Yes.
He's one of their – okay. Well, they signed David Marvin. Good. But here's the thing. Like, I don't know. There's a reason Thompson went undrafted. I get it. But we've also seen that the guys – he was one of the best run stuffers in college football.
And it would have filled a need for Atlanta as well.
Yeah, and I know they took the kid from South Florida. I don't know much about him at defensive tackle, but...
The big dude, and that's all
Yeah,
I really
but I mean,
noticed.
That's just the thing. It's like you get to the sixth round, it's your last pick of the draft, and, I mean, if you're just going to throw a dart and take a linebacker from Yale, I mean, why not take a guy that played, at Georgia?
Oh, I agree. And Trenton ends up signing with the Browns. It's so funny how Nick Chubb didn't choose to go to the Browns. Trenton Thompson ends up choosing to go to the Browns. But switching gears to the players that, were such great ambassadors for the University of Georgia, and you look at just only, five picks apart, how different, your paths can be. I mean, Sony Michel gets drafted at the end of the first round, goes to the New England Patriots, and Nick Chubb, a few picks later, gets drafted by the Browns. So,
and it's interesting because – I thought the Patriots taking Sony at 31 was an odd choice to me because they've got Rex Burkhead, they've got James White, who caught 14 passes against the Falcons in the Super Bowl. I get they're going to have to get rid of somebody. They've got Jeremy Hill, they've got Mike Gillisley. Odds are one of those guys is going to be cut. But
I think Sony's better than all those
but
guys.
But I don't envision him being like their three-down running back.
No, that's they employ, though. I mean, they have like the scat back kind of guy that can do a lot of stuff, and then they have – they're sort of between the tackles, guys.
Right,
that's how
they've always been. Which is why, why would you take a guy like that at pick number 31 when Lamar Jackson's on the board? But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is, Sony was the first round draft pick, but he's not going into a situation where he's going to be the man. Nick Chubb is going into a situation in Cleveland where he's going to be their man.
Oh yeah, but I still think Sony Michel is going to have a hell of a season. I think that they will figure out how to utilize him to best benefit their team. And I think that he could take the league by storm.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
they didn't get
so.
A bad pick. But, no. I mean, James White caught 14 passes in the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Yeah, but Bill Belichick loves the value, so maybe James White ends up on the cutting block. You know what I mean? It just depends. I mean, he likes, having guys that he doesn't have to pay a whole lot, and Sony's going to be on the 31st pick's salary, which isn't near what a lot of other guys would be. So I think they're getting great value there. And Wynn, I mean, now to have two UGA players who are going to be on the Patriots offensive line, I don't know if Wynn will battle for a starting position, although you don't usually take a guy in the first round on the offensive line and don't plan on starting him. So if he does indeed, slide in there and you've got two Georgia players in Boss Andrews and Isaiah Wynn on the Patriots offensive line, look, Bill Belichick, and this is going to be a hot take here, Bill Belichick drafts SEC players, and the Patriots win or go to the Super Bowl a lot. Imagine that.
Right. But the reason they do that, though, is because they have a quarterback who went to Michigan.
Well, of course.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Brady is the reason why that team is winning.
Well, of course. But, also, you look at all the other players, though, that have played in the SEC, especially on defense. They love SEC players or players that kind of fit that mold. And I'll throw a Miami into that as kind of the same kind of thing because, Vince Wilfork is a guy that was very successful there. But it's just unbelievable for the Georgia guys, for two of them to go there. And, Sony Michel and Isaiah Wynn will have very good chances of picking up Super Bowl rings in their rookie seasons.
Yeah, and, David Andrews already has one. Malcolm Mitchell's there. He's already has one, which brings me to, the Falcons have a very good chance to play in the Super Bowl, too. If they're playing New England, who are you rooting for? Do you want the Falcons to win?
Oh, well, I'm not rooting against the Falcons.
Okay,
but
all right.
I will
with those
say,
Alabama receivers.
And let's not forget John Atkins, either. John Atkins also signs undrafted a free agent contract with the Patriots, so he'll have a chance to compete, try to be on that team as well. But the Falcons, I love the Calvin Ridley pick. I really did. I did not want Taven Bryan, the defensive tackle from Florida. I just didn't think that that's going to be a move that necessarily improves you a whole lot, whereas you bring in a Calvin Ridley who can play some on the outside, but it seems like in this Falcons setup, you'll have Sanu and Jones on the outside and Calvin Ridley in the slot. And he will be perfect, I think, in the slot for that offense. And I think what that pick signals is that, look, Dan Quinn is very confident in his ability to scheme and his defense and in the players that he has pan-picked for this defense. And if he didn't see anybody he thought could be a difference maker on it, then you go to the other side of the ball. And I think the philosophy for this team is going to remain bend but don't break, although even last year the Falcons were a top 10 defense.
Yeah, and what the Falcons have this year, eight of Atlanta's opponents this season, half the schedule, had top 10 passing efficiency defenses.
Right.
And
you've got to get better in the receiving corps.
And a ninth one, Arizona, finished 11th. So you basically have more than half your schedule against really good elite defenses.
Although they did cut the Honey Badger in Arizona.
Yeah,
which
is Peterson's still there.
He's still there.
Yeah,
right.
But I mean, so, you know, I like the pick too, but more that, like, I didn't love Calvin Ridley is, for example, Dallas got rid of Dez Bryant, and if a team was drafting Calvin Ridley to come and be their wide receiver number one,
no.
I think Calvin Ridley was going to be a bust. So for me, like, Atlanta was actually a really good fit.
It's all about the fit.
For Calvin Ridley, mm-hmm. more than Ridley's like a really good fit for somebody else because he doesn't have to come in and be the man.
I totally agree.
Right, you got Julio and you got Sanu ahead of him. He's basically wide receiver three to replace Gabriel, and I think, yeah, he's got a chance to have just an enormous season with the Falcons. And I prefer drafting him over the dude from Florida that I was barely aware of.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, and look, again, I just don't think that that would have been a pick that would have impacted your team as much as Calvin Ridley will. I think that's going to they're going to find a great way to use him on offense. Sarkisian's already familiar with Ridley because he was the offensive coordinator for one game at Alabama and was a I guess he was an analyst or whatever they wanted to call it for them for a while.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's familiar with the player, so he knows what his strengths are. So I think that's going to work out well. And look, like I said about the philosophy, the Falcons are going to be a team that Dan Quinn is very confident in his scheme and his ability to scheme game in and game out for the different offenses that they're going to face. So they're going to try to outscore you. You know, they're going to be a team that bend but not break on defense and try and outscore us because we're going to score a lot of points with Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, Calvin Ridley, Austin Hooper, Matt Ryan. We're going to, and of course the running backs, Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman. And this will probably be Coleman's last season in Atlanta, so maybe I know that they drafted that Ito Smith, that running back whose nickname is Ito because when he was a baby, his parents thought he looked like Judge Ito, which is a fantastic reason to nickname someone
that. Which is also sad because it shows like how old we are.
Right.
Yeah, that there's a kid now who is playing in the NFL who was named because he looked like the judge from the OJ trial.
I know, man. It makes you feel a little bit long in the tooth there. But I think the Falcons did a great job. I think, was it NFL.com graded them at like an A-? So, I mean, I thought they had a good draft. Again, like you said with the Yale linebacker, at that point you're just throwing darts.
Well, yeah. And I mean, so my official policy would be just take a guy that played somewhere big then. I mean, because you're taking a linebacker from Yale. All right. They took the wide receiver from LSU. And I mean, the running back, and I get it. I mean, either both Freeman and Coleman will not be on the team beyond this season. And, you know, and this guy did rack up a pretty good amount of yards rushing over the last two seasons at Southern Miss. But, like, he wasn't even invited to the combine. So it's just one of those picks that you didn't need to make in the fourth round. I mean, he might have been a guy you could have gotten as an undrafted free agent. But, you know, so be it. I mean, the first three picks were positions you knew Atlanta was going to grab, you know, maybe in a different order. But defensive tackle, a cornerback, because beyond Trufant, Alford, and then William Poole, that's a pretty thin position. And that kid, Isaiah Oliver, out of Colorado he was viewed in a lot of the lead up to the draft as a potential first rounder.
Yeah.
And, like, I was watching one of the Thunder Jazz playoff games about a week ago, and Adam Schefter was the sideline reporter.
Oh, yeah, they do that every once in a while because he likes the NBA.
Okay, so he was interviewing Billy Donovan, you know, coming out of a timeout. And granted, Billy Donovan caught him off guard, but all of a sudden Billy Donovan was like, hey, but what do you think about the draft? You know, who are the top cornerbacks in the draft or whatever? And so, again, I'm sure Adam Schefter was caught off guard, but he was, you know, so off the top of his head, he was like, well, Derwin James, and he went Isaiah Oliver out of Colorado.
Nice.
So, you know, again, I mean, that's how this guy was, I think, perceived coming in. And so for Atlanta to get him when they did, I mean, that's probably a good pick. So, you know, the top three picks I like, I mean, after that, you know, again, you're just kind of rolling the dice. But if you are just rolling the dice, I mean, maybe take a shot at, like, you know, I'm gonna get a guy that played at like Georgia or Ohio State, USC or something like that.
But on Oliver, I did see an interesting stat from Pro Football Focus. He faced three, like in terms of the one-on-one matchup, he faced three drafted receivers this season or this past season, and he only allowed six completions out of 15 attempts for like 77 yards with no touchdowns. I think like three or four pass deflections. So against the top-level talent that he faced, he was very, very good. So I think that was a shrewd pick by Atlanta as well.
Yeah, I like those top two picks. Again, I don't know much about the defensive tackle from South Florida, but that's fine. That's a position that they need.
Right, so we'll see.
So we'll see about that. But, you know, after that, again, I don't know.
I thought they should have drafted Cam Nizalek in, like, the seventh round because they're going to need a punter. I mean, I know Bosher's still there, but, I mean, how much long? I mean, he's been there forever. You know,
He has not signed
with anyone yet, and I thought that would be an interesting one, but – the Falcons apparently thought David Marvin would be the better undrafted free agent Georgia special teams guy to go after. So we'll see how that works out. What did you think of the Browns draft? Because here's the thing. They had four picks in the top 35, and Nick Chubb, I love that pick for them. I think he'll be good. Baker Mayfield is just such a 50-50 toss-up kind of guy. Where I really thought they reached was taking Denzel Ward fourth.
Me too.
Especially with Bradley Chubb on the board.
Yeah, I mean, to leave him on the board was crazy. And I don't know, maybe they had tried to deal and they didn't have any dance partners there. But they did, I mean, they got the highest rated corner in the draft, but certainly it was a reach at four. I like the pick at one. I mean, to me, Mayfield was the top quarterback in the draft, so they took him. So I don't have any issue there. And then
that's the thing. I think he was a top quarterback in college football. You think he was a top quarterback in college football. How's that going to translate to the next level? But here's the main thing I love about Mayfield. You look at what he did with the talent around him versus what Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen did with equal or maybe better in some cases talent around them. Baker Mayfield was way better. And I mean, Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, you know, Sam Darnold threw a lot of picks. Those guys did not win enough for me. And I don't think that statistic gets looked at enough. You know, it's the game tape. It's how big this guy's hands are. It's this guy's neck size. It's all these stupid things that get looked at when bare bones minimum you should be looking at is, did this guy win? Baker Mayfield did, and way more than Sam Rosen or Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen.
And the thing with Darnold, too, that I just don't think is going to be, you know, you're going to correct moving up a level in play, too, is the turnover thing. Not just the interceptions, but he fumbled a lot also. Right. You know, and if you're fumbling in college, I mean, you're going to be fumbling a lot in the pros, too. So,
I mean, the only guy I've ever seen make a really big adjustment on that in his NFL career was Tiki Barber. You remember in the beginning of his career, he used to fumble all the time.
Right.
Then he changed the way he carried the ball and, like, never fumbled after that. But that's something that's very hard to correct. It's because it's your mentality about being careless with the ball.
Right.
And I think Darnold's going to have a lot of trouble with that. I agree with you. And then the Bills jumping up to take Josh Allen also seems like just
that
very
was the worst
high
pick of the
bust
draft.
Potential.
Yeah, that was the worst pick of the draft. I mean, Josh Allen is no good. He wasn't good in college. He wasn't even good in community college. So he's not going to be good in the NFL. He's not going to suddenly turn into a great quarterback in the NFL. And the Bills traded up twice to get him. And drafted him ahead of Josh Rosen and drafted him ahead of Lamar Jackson, who were both superior college quarterbacks. So that was, easily not even close, the worst pick of the draft.
But in our books, the Bears and the Patriots had the best drafts because they each took two Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lock.
Yeah.
And Roquan, for me, before the draft, I had Roquan Smith and Derwin James are the two guys. Like, if you know, what would you really, like, you know, stake on the players that are going to be 5 years from now? All pros, and no doubt about it, stud draft picks, no chance at busting. Roquan and Derwin James were my two.
And for Derwin James to have fallen as far as he did was pretty shocking. And before we jump into the NBA playoff talk here, I did want to ask you about your Dolphins and Minkah Fitzpatrick. I thought that was a gift from the heavens for him to fall that far to you guys.
Yeah, I like the pick too. Now, I got excited momentarily because all of a sudden you got to pick number 10 and the Raiders were sitting there and Josh Rosen was still on the board. And I'm like, oh my gosh,
didn't the trade up,
the Dolphins are going to get Josh Rosen. And then, yeah, just like that, the Cardinals trade up and they get him. And as soon as the Cardinals traded up to 10, you knew what was happening. But yeah, I mean, I love the pick of Minkah Fitzpatrick, and I love that tight end out of Penn State too, Gesicki, that they took in the second round. So yeah, all in all, I think the Dolphins did okay, but you know, the Dolphins, unfortunately, are still saddled with Ryan Tannehill as their quarterback, and until they do something about that, they're not going anywhere.
You are tuned into the crossover here on 960theref.com. Sam Franco, Chris Brame, along with you, switching gears to the NBA playoffs, where I can't remember a first round of the NBA playoffs that was more intriguing to me than this one.
It was really good. It was as good as it's been, I mean, probably since like the 80s or 90s or something like that, because the first round usually just stinks.
Yeah, I was a little upset that my man Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks couldn't get the job done against the Celtics. I was really looking forward to seeing a Giannis versus Joel Embiid matchup, but that's not what we're going to get. We're going to get 76ers and Celtics, and we're also going to get the Cleveland Cavaliers, who barely escaped the Indiana Pacers with a series win. They are going to take on the Toronto Raptors, a team Cleveland just has Toronto's number. So I'll tell you this, if Toronto doesn't win game one, watch out. You know, that's one of those where it's going to start getting in their head. So they really need to come out and win game one and put a stamp on things.
Yeah, Cleveland is not afraid of Toronto.
No.
And, I mean, it should be the other way around, quite frankly. But
right, but, I mean, I understand. I mean, LeBron James even said it after game seven against Indiana. He's like, I'm burned. I'm tired. I need to go home and sleep. Don't even ask me about Toronto right now. I'll get to that tomorrow. Like, he definitely has been taxed, and he's been playing a lot. And quite frankly, he's the only one consistently giving anything up for Cleveland. So I think it's going to be very hard for them to win that series. I know Cleveland's not scared of Toronto, but unless other people start to step up a lot more, it's going to be tough for them to win this series.
Yeah, I mean, because it is. It's definitely taxing on LeBron at this point, but I'm still – my mindset is when I see him not in the NBA Finals is when I can begin to believe that he won't be. And, you know, even in that series against Indiana where they lost game one badly, never led in it, and then ended up they blew a big lead, what, in game three, and were down 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they still come back at the end and still pull it out and win it. So, and really, I mean, because if LeBron needs to, he is capable of just completely taking over that over any game and not really needing any assist from anyone else in that Cavs lineup.
It's so funny how, I mean, if you look at the way the playoffs broke down, the East is actually pretty chalky. You got 1-4 and 2-3. And then, I mean, it's still kind of chalky out West. You got 1-5 and 2-6. The Pelicans, the surprise there, as nobody really gave them a chance to, in fact, every ESPN expert that picked that series picked the Trailblazers to beat the Pelicans. But the Pelicans having a good series against Portland. However, game one of their series with Golden State, which happened this past Saturday, blowout city for the Warriors, and they still don't have Curry back yet. They're thinking he may come back for game two, but there's no reason to believe you're not going to get 2-1 out West, especially because the Rockets also dispatched of the Jazz with relative ease in their game one. So out West, it looks like things are going to go 1-2. But I really do think that in the East, I think Philly is the team that's going to make the NBA Finals.
Yeah, it seems like that's the everyone is kind of back in the Sixers all of a sudden. They've got Embiid back playing, even with that that freaky mask he's wearing.
But I loved what Embiid said when he was asked about like the possibility of LeBron James joining him in the offseason. He was basically like, thanks, but no thanks. We're good. Like he says they can win the NBA title without him.
Okay.
Which I think is kind of funny because I've been saying all season long that that's the best landing spot for LeBron. Like right. If he could get his way to Philadelphia, which he couldn't because he can opt out and be a free agent. I mean, can you imagine a front line of – and I know – I say front line. I know LeBron pretty much plays every position. But a front line of Simmons, Embiid, and LeBron James? Good grief.
Well, yeah, they'd probably, like, I mean, they would basically threaten what Golden State did a couple of years ago.
Absolutely.
Barely losing.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
It would just be a matter of, like, because, you know, what Golden State found out that year after they ended up blowing that 3-1 lead and losing the finals, it's like, well, was it worth it in the end? So you look at them this year. I mean, they basically, I know they had a bunch of guys injured, but at the end of the year, they basically just went into cruise control because they knew they were the 2 seed. No one could pass them, and they couldn't pass Houston. So, I mean, over their last 17 games, like, they were pretty terrible. But, you know, here they are in the playoffs now, and what, they've lost one game, I guess. The Spurs did beat them once.
Right.
But, you know, they're rolling right now, even without Curry. But it has been, like, the series have been pretty good, but at the end, I think it's like 18 consecutive favorites have won these games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, there's not, I mean, even with Utah, and I know that was the 3-6 matchup, right?
No, 3-6 was Pelicans and Trailblazers.
That's right. That was 4-5.
Yeah, yeah.
But even with, like, Utah and Oklahoma
City. Utah was the 4-5.
Yeah. I mean, the favorites in those in those series, just kept winning every game, and the same thing was happening in Boston and Milwaukee. So the favorites in these individual games are winning them all.
Yeah, so I don't think I even need to ask you out west. It looks like we're going 1-2. I mean, obviously with Houston and Golden State.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the east, I'm going Toronto and Philly. I just don't, and I know that it seems really dumb to doubt LeBron James at this point, but I just don't see them being able to win a seven-game series with right now with the way that they're LeBron's usage. It's just off the charts right now.
What's the deal with like Jaylen Brown got hurt the other day? Is he now out for Boston?
Oh, I didn't know if.
When did they play again? Saturday?
Tonight.
Well, no. But when did they play Milwaukee? It was Saturday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like he got hurt in that game. And I think he left it and never came back.
And by tonight, I mean Monday. We're recording this Monday, Tuesday. We always have to throw that out there.
Yeah, I don't know. Would that be potentially another guy to watch out for out of that?
He's doubtful for game one. That's all I've seen so far.
So I'm with you on the Sixers, but Toronto ain't beating Cleveland. Come on.
I mean, if LeBron, I will be more impressed than I've ever been with LeBron James in my entire life if he gets this team to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, he's the best player ever. I mean, come on.
Let's not go off on that tangent right now because I don't want to get all mad about Michael Jordan. But I will say that right now he's obviously the best player on the planet, and it's not even close.
Yeah, well, he has been for like a decade now. He's not losing to Toronto. Come on, Sam.
His usage, though, man.
He's a young man still.
Yeah, I mean, it's just he has been playing like this pretty much since he was 18 years old.
I know. How old is he now? 32, 33?
Yeah, which is ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, eventually.
Look at the shape he's in.
I don't know. He started cramping up at the end of that game seven against Indiana. I'm just saying. I mean, not even the end. Like, he had to miss part of that game because of cramps. So.
He should go ahead and, like, shave his head, though.
If I were them,
Tiger, I mean, why does Tiger not shave his head yet?
Well, that's a good point. But I mean, if I were them, I'd sit him for a game. Like I would give Toronto a game. I'd be like, all right, here's one game for y'all. We're gonna like our chances of winning 4 out of 6 with a fully rested LeBron James.
Well, like say they win tomorrow night, then like sit LeBron in game
two.
Do
not play him in game two. I mean, right. If you win game one in Toronto, why would you play him in game two? Because then
you
at that
the home
point,
court.
You have to win 3 games out of 5.
Yeah.
So
yeah, maybe.
I just think he needs rest, and he even said it. So, all right, before we get out of here on the podcast today, we have a Major League Baseball player to talk about, and not just one, because obviously Ronald Acuña Jr. is one of the most highly anticipated Braves call-ups ever.
Yeah.
And he is delivering so far on a very good stretch. He's hitting something like 420-something in his first few games with the Braves. And him and Ozzie Albies together, I mean, Albies is on a tear right
What
now.
Is he at, like 8 or 9 home runs already?
9 home runs.
Yeah.
Yeah, hit another leadoff home run yesterday in the win over the Phillies. So the guy is just continuing to rake. He and Acuña are just spurring this offense. And let's not forget Freddie Freeman, obviously. But, I mean, the Braves were a team that nobody really was giving a chance to do a whole lot this season. And I know that they're pitching, particularly their bullpen, but also a lot of their starters aren't great either. If this team actually had decent pitching, they might could contend for a wild card spot.
Well, maybe Guhar will come back at some point. I know there's some rumblings that Mike Soroka might get a start here within the next couple of days. But Saturday was a pretty good example, or maybe it was Friday's game. Whatever game Tehran started, where the Braves scored 3 in the first inning, and then he went walk homer, and it was tied just like that.
That's the most Julio Tehran thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, that's just the end of the day. I mean, Atlanta's pitching. It is. It's a good start, but it is only April.
Of course.
And I just
– For one more day.
For one more day, it's still April, but the Braves pitching is not good enough to hold up for the next 5 months.
It's not, and that's the problem. That's my issue, which why haven't they gone after a frontline starter? You know, they're like, well, we're still rebuilding and still in the process. It's like – Well, did you not think you could be what you've been in April? You know what I mean? Did they not think that? Are they being caught off guard by this? Because if they are, that's unfortunate. If they're not, then why the hell didn't they go out and bring in a good frontline pitcher?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've got a couple of these young arms in the farm system, and maybe they will get a chance. I know Guhara's been on the DL, and, you know, again, Soroka, I guess, is the next hot shot who could be brought up. But we'll see with him. But for at this point, when you were dealing with – Tehran, you know, Fulton Evich is, I mean, he's all right, but
he's just so shaky.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, well, guy's going to end up with what, about a 4 ERA?
Yeah. I mean, he's a good maybe fourth or fifth starter, but he's not a front line. And here's my issue, too. It's like, you look at what the Astros have done, and I think a lot of people are comparing what the Braves are trying to do to what the Astros did. It's like, that's fine, but the Astros didn't win the World Series until they brought in a frontline, you know, frontline help. You know, they had their guys that they brought up, Keuchel and some others, but they bring in Verlander and Charlie Morton, and that's what put them over the top. And, I mean, that's what you got to do if you're the Braves. You need a veteran arm that's really good to go alongside with all of your young pitching.
Yeah.
And I'm just frustrated as a Braves fan that they don't seem to have enough trust in themselves this year to where they think they could contend.
And you've got, I mean, at some point, too, they've got to figure out that, I mean, what to do with Tehran.
Get rid of him if he can't pitch at home.
Yeah, I mean, well, he can't pitch anywhere. I was in Philadelphia this weekend. Yeah, it's 3-0, and he goes, walk, homer.
The experiment has run its course. You know,
yeah.
I think it's time to move him on. I would really like to see them put some money into a starting pitcher, and I would also like to see them sign Bryce Harper, which I'm hearing more and more could be a possibility.
And he's starting 5 straight opening days. The Braves signing Bryce Harper.
I'd love that. Can you imagine an outfield of Acuna, Inciarte, and Bryce Harper?
And Harper with Freeman, Albies, you know, Dansby, I guess, is doing
Jose
fine.
Bautista at third base.
Yeah, Bautista at third, then Suzuki and Flowers, the catching platoon. You know, but then if Tehran is still the team's ace, forget it. I mean, you're not going to win with that lineup.
You're not. And I think they're going to get past that at a certain point, but you've got to commit some money. And money to be spent. And Bryce Harper would obviously be a pipe dream. I'd love it if it happened. But you need to go out and get some pitching.
Well,
that's what you got to do.
Quite frankly, I mean, I'd probably rather have Max Scherzer than Bryce Harper.
Well, of course. But, you know, just to lure in the kids, to get the kids interested, you got to bring the guy who's trying to change it from being a no-fun league and telling people that they're asking clown questions, and a guy who will literally run headfirst into a wall to try to make a catch.
Well, I mean,
the smartest thing he's ever done.
Scherzer's got those two different colored eyes that make for a cool bobblehead, though.
Oh, there you go. Didn't even think about that. All right, that'll wrap things up here on this edition of The Crossover. Sam Franco, Chris Brain, thank you so much for joining us. We will be back again next week with another exciting episode of The Crossover right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brain on 960theref.com.